Hey everybody, welcome to The Drive. I'm Gail Hunt and you are tuned to WCUW. We're at 91.3 on the FM dial. We're online at WCUW.org. Have a really special show tonight. Last week in my home studio called The Music Room, I had Cliff Goodwin and Richard Nealon come in and talk about their adventure about going to Abbey Road Studio over in London to make the second album, Cliff Goodwin and Rhythm and Blues Union, called Double It Up. And it's just an exciting thing for our own hometown here to have this happen to our own Cliff Goodwin. So it's really cool. So stay tuned. Just in a few minutes, we'll dig into that interview. I am going to play the title track, Double It Up, starting off the show. But the other part of this is we are in our spring fun drive. So if you become a member tonight, go onto our website, WCUW.org. If you either renew or become a new member, Cliff and Richard have offered me a limited supply of CDs or LPs. So you can put a note on that form which you'd rather have if you'd like one. Maybe you already have one. If you already have one, you can still become a member or renew. That would be nice. It is a spring fun drive, but nice little perk. So I really thank them for offering that. That's awesome. So we're going to hear Double It Up, and then we're going to dig into this great interview. So enjoy.
We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Drive. We have a special couple of guests in here with us tonight, Richard Nealon and Cliff Goodwin. Richard was the executive producer, and Cliff Goodwin, of course, is Worcester's own Cliff Goodwin. We're going to talk about the album Double It Up that was recorded at Abbey Road Studios, yes, in London. Yes. And I can't even believe that we get to, you know, have this kind of cool thing that happened right here in Worcester, which is awesome. And so, you know, I've known Cliff for a long time. Richard, you're brand new to me, and he's been calling you Peach.
Yeah, Peach is a nickname that I've had for decades now.
40 years.
Or more.
No, maybe 50.
So yeah. I have to ask that first. Like, where did Peach come from? And then I want to know what your background is.
Because well, they come from Georgia. Yeah. Oh, you're talking about this Peach. Sorry. Okay.
Well, Peach was with me since I was 12. I have very short hair. And some kid I went to grammar school with rubbed my head one day and said, feels like peach fuzz. And Peach arose.
That stuck.
And then when I met with these guys and met up with them, it just continued on.
So you've been kind of in touch with the music business in which capacity? Because I did hear you off mic mention recording some other people and doing some stuff. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I have been involved a little bit. I used to promote concerts at the auditorium. I was an event coordinator at the Centrum for a while.
Oh, wow.
And I have recorded certain people along the way. Yep. And, you know, that was fun. But then I went off to law school. Became an attorney, and Cliff went off to be a musician with Joe Cocker and many others, Robert Palmer. So when I retired, I basically said, hey, I want to get back into it.
Yeah.
So I called up Cliff, and we met, and we talked about some things. So I've been on and off with music, and it's just something that's part of my life as well, even though I had another career.
Peach was the original sound man for the original version of American Standard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, version 1.1, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, in 70, 69, 70, 71, 72.
Wow. Yeah.
And that was fun. Yeah. That was a blast. And
I bet.
So when I was going to retire, I said to myself, well, when's I the happiest? Mm. And it was when I was working with these guys back in American Standard.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I got to get back in touch.
Yeah, yeah.
So the rest is history, but we did get back in touch.
And he did. He called me up, and I said, Do I know you?
Do you
I
still know you?
No, actually, that was a great time, certainly for me, because you were running totally on passion back then. The problems of the world, both outside and inside, weren't there. You woke up in the morning and you went to bed at night with music around you in its purest sense. And so from that point of view, that era, when Peach called up, it was like, wow, I remember, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And you start hashing things out again, you know, and just talking about the past and trying to bring a lot of it forward, and which is how the album came about. But it was the best time that I had in my life in terms of music was with Cliff and his band. And I've been a fan of Cliff's forever.
Well, yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
Even from the End days. I used to go see the End play these little cafeteria gigs. And Cliff would be the guitar player. And I said, wow, who is this guy? And I would follow him all the way through. So
oh, that's cool.
Even though we went different paths, kept in touch in terms of what he was doing. And then when COVID hit, it was a good opportunity for us to get back together.
So you
grew up and I didn't.
So you are kind of the reason. So Double It Up wasn't even a thing.
No.
Weren't planning on doubling it up with a second album for Rhythm and Blues Union until Peach said,
not.
Let's do
and
it.
Then it gets even a little bit deeper. Should I pick it up from here?
Yeah, sure.
This was COVID time.
Yeah.
Peach called up and said, we're getting together at sitting out in the backyard of our original drummer's house, Jimmy Evans. You know, George Evans, and Jimmy and Peach and I and a couple of guys who used to roadie for American Standard. And we'd sit around and shoot it. And I had said, well, this is a perfect opportunity for me to retire, you know, good place to end. Worldwide pandemic.
Seemed like the world was ending.
Had
so.
That way of a finality, if you will. We all went home, and I think the next we met again a couple weeks later, and Peach said, just out of the clear blue, this is like basically, he held up the winning lottery number. He said, you know, if I really like your first record, would you make another? He said, can you get the same band together? I said, of course. And he said, there's one catch. Now, being the the cynic that I am, I'm thinking, well, let's see, it's only 50 years later. Peach now wants to play wobble board.
Or ukulele.
Or ukulele. Ooh, yeah. Ukulele. But I said, okay, well, what is it? He said, we got to do it at Abbey Road. Now,
really?
I'm not so sure I heard that correctly. But it's still, to say it this at this point in time, it's still unbelievable.
Yeah, it's totally unbelievable.
Enough to try. And when I went ahead and spread my wings, I found out I could fly. Sometimes all it takes is a leap of faith. Oh, baby, sometimes all it takes is a leap of faith.
just want to slip in that was Leap of Faith, track number 2 from Double It Up. Now back to the interview.
Oh, yeah.
And Peach, where did you come up with this idea? Just
because I was a huge fan of Cliff's. He's a tremendous guitar player. Yeah. I don't have to tell you that.
Yeah,
right?
I just saw him last week at a club, and I was blown away. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah, he's incredible. When he told me he was thinking of retiring, I seized on it, and I told him the first time he said it, I said, no, Cliff, you can't retire.
Yeah.
He said, well, you know, and he's making up some excuses. Yeah. And so I said, we can't let that happen. So when we got together the second time, as he mentioned, I said, you know, let's do something, Cliff. Let's do a second album. And the way he said it is correct. And I said, if you can get the same guys together. And he said, yeah, I can get them together. So let's go to Abbey Road.
And how'd you pull that off?
Well, I had been there already with a singer-songwriter that I produced an album for, a woman named Kayla Farnham. Tremendous singer-songwriter. So I brought her over there, and we mastered the album there.
Ah.
But we didn't record it there. We recorded it in Boston. But I wanted to go to Abbey Road and master the record.
Yeah.
Little did I know I would make all the connections I needed to make, and they're very wonderful people over there. So when this came up, I knew I could get us in there. You have to tell them who's coming. But I sent them a little tiny bio on each person. And Cliff, of course, was in there, and they said, oh, yeah, come on over. So we just booked the date. Luckily, I had made those connections from going over with Kayla. And it just worked out that when we wanted to go, it was much easier. They do ask you who's coming over. It's not hard. I mean, as long as you're a serious musician, you can get in there. But you do have to tell them what's going on.
Because they don't want their name on something that's going to be like, eh.
And they're very careful about that. In fact, you need permission to get their logo on your product, whether it's a record or whatever, which they did give Cliff permission. It's on the back, that little logo there. You know, they're very particular about their brand.
Because it's not only a high-functioning studio, but it's also a shrine.
Great people. So I wanted to go there with the band. Obviously, this band could record something anywhere, and it would be great. It's just the group of people are just all super professional. But I needed to go back for myself because my desire was to record there. Couldn't do it without a tremendous band.
Well, you certainly found a tremendous band.
So
okay, but this is now, now it gets interesting because this is all happening under the umbrella of a worldwide pandemic and the applicable and attending restrictions.
Yeah, so we booked it. Pandemic was going on, and the first one was in November, and we had it booked, and you have to book many months in advance because they have a list like this, right? And we were always thinking, hope pandemic, because you couldn't go over there without a test.
That
was negative. Finally, that went away, but you couldn't come back without a test that was negative.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, and these guys are thinking, we can't get trapped in London if somebody gets COVID, and you've got to stay there for a couple of weeks or whatever. We had to cancel the November one because those COVID restrictions were still in place. That pushed us to June of 22. As June was going along and we were talking with the guys and said, look, guys, I don't know. We'll wait to the very last minute. But if they don't lift that ban to test negative.
All that was left was the return ban at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's right. If they don't lift that return ban, we still can't go because they all have gigs and everything else. It was 2 days before. I'm thinking, this ain't going to happen. I'm going to have to cancel again. But I didn't. I said, wait another day. So the day before we were supposed to leave, and they had a gig, I think, in Connecticut somewhere.
Oh, we were doing the Shabu Fest.
So they had a gig there. So I get up. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. I said, look, I got to cancel now.
Because tomorrow was the leaving
day. Tomorrow was leaving. Yeah. That next night we were on the plane. I did. I started canceling everything. I canceled the studio. By email, I canceled the plane reservations, the hotel, and whatever else, right? And the transportation. Just as I canceled it, literally 15 minutes later, I've got emails to show that. I get a message from my son-in-law, and he says, hey, you may want to look at this. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, okay. I look at it, and it says, Biden just lifted the requirement to come back and test.
Yay, Joe Biden!
Yeah, but you didn't have to test anymore. But I just canceled everything.
Uh-oh.
So we're leaving tomorrow night.
¶¶ This is Peter Clementi, and if you're listening to the radio, be sure it's WCUW Community Radio, 91.3 FM, or WCUW.org.
I hate to interrupt the interview, but I do need to tell you that you're tuned to WCUW. We're at 91.3 on the FM dial. We're online at WCUW.org. And I do want to remind you that if you, just tonight, special deal, if you want to renew or become a new member, Cliff and Richard have offered me a limited supply of albums or CDs. So when you do that online, please make a note of which you'd rather, if you'd like one of them. And thank you so much for supporting us. And we are community radio, and that's why we get to do things like this. We get to have these cool interviews with our local legends that have done such amazing things, and going to Abbey Road, it's just mind-blowing, really. So thank you so much for listening and supporting the station. And we'll get back to the interview in just a moment.
Support for WCUW comes from you and Assumption University, which provides a curriculum rooted in the liberal arts and grounded in a Catholic intellectual tradition. Assumption graduates are known for their critical intelligence, thoughtful citizenship, and compassionate service. Learn more at assumption.edu.
So now I'm really... It's a very uptight situation.
Yeah. What the heck do we do? Because you guys are ready to go. You have.
Well, actually, we weren't. We figured it wasn't going to happen. We knew still in our minds and everybody's
that probably it wasn't going to happen.
That Biden hadn't raised the restrictions. They had to test negative to come home.
So we're all. None of us thought we were going. So I immediately got on the phone and I called Abbey Road first, my contact there. And I said, "Oh, did you get that email? Don't pay attention to it. We're coming.
Who'd you talk to at Abbey Road?
It was a woman named Peach.
No.
Yeah. Believe it or not.
That's weird.
Peach, this is Peach.
No.
Yeah. Peach.
Peach here.
We're still coming. So she said, I just got your email, and I was just going to process the cancellation, but she didn't. I said, oh, stop. She said, you're coming? I said, yeah, we're going to be there.
Oh, my God.
So then I did the same thing with the travel agency, and she was just about to hit the buttons.
What was her name? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. No, Atlas Travel. Barbara, wonderful person.
But she's a peach.
She is a peach.
Yeah, she's a peach. So she hadn't canceled yet. And then, of course, everything started to fall into place. So now I start calling up these guys. I called Cliff first. I said, Cliff, we're going.
Oh my God, what do you mean
we're going?
So we're ready to go on stage almost.
Yeah.
Down in Willimantic.
Yes.
And of course, it's the same band. It's Mitch, Marty, Wolf. It's like I was making plans for dinner tomorrow night, you know, which had nothing to do with Delta Airlines. That's for sure.
And actually, Derek, the sax player, had made arrangements to go somewhere else because he said, well, we're not going. So I think he was going to Maine or something.
Oh, that's right.
I think he was going away. And so. But anyway,
pack your bags. We're leaving tomorrow.
So
for the biggest recording experience of your life, I would say. I mean, going to Abbey Road
is not. I think so.
Oh, and it's not just that though. It's the whole thing, London.
Yeah.
It's difficult to explain the feeling. It's like if you won the lottery. Okay, everybody can understand that. Here's a lot of money. But how did you feel when they gave you the check?
Like, whoa.
This is what I'm talking about. We were going to get on a plane to London to record.
At Abbey Road. Because you've recorded all over the world, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
you've been... Every major...
And you've played some huge... Studio. Like, somebody told me, I think Cliff's played in front of like 20,000 people or something like that. So you've played huge stadiums of people. But this is...
The largest crowd we ever played to with Joe was about 125,000.
Wow, and that's Joe Cocker, for those that don't know
who Cliff
is and who he played with. Joe Cocker, look him up.
About 125,000. That's a story in itself.
This is up there, and going to Abbey Road is up there in your world life experiences.
That was 100,000, okay. That was a gig. Isn't that nice? This is, you got to understand, at our age, it's like going to the Holy Land or going to Mecca. You're going to the source. You know, granted, the Beatles are from Liverpool. We know this, okay? Mm-hmm. But they made this magic, in the most part, in this studio. That in itself is really monumental to people our age who, you know, the tender age of 70-ish.
Well, because the Beatles changed the world musically.
And culturally.
Yeah.
Yes.
As well as music.
With their music.
And I remember from our Fun Time interview series with you, Cliff, you mentioned that as soon as the Beatles hit the Ed Sullivan Show, the next day, everybody wanted to be in a band. Everybody, it just completely...
Totally, yeah. And then little did I know that within about, well, really from February 64, so a dozen years later, I was playing with Joe. And then, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm the luckiest guy alive, to say the least.
Yeah.
No two ways about it.
Yeah.
But getting back to the Abbey Road thing, so it's not, you can't just take it out of context and say, oh, you're going to Abbey Road. It's how it came about.
Yeah.
The trip, the sessions, the environment. It's
that it got canceled once, and then it was just about, yeah, it was just basically about canceled.
Well, you have to remember, too, you have to have certain equipment in place, which was my job, right? So I say to Cliff, what do you need for an amplifier? Because we're not carrying equipment over there. And Marty, what do you need for a drum set? And Wolf, what do you need? The only guy who brought, well, you brought your guitar and Derek brought his sax.
Yeah.
But
and
the rest of the guys.
Mitch insisted on using there's a special piano that sits in Studio 2, which is where the boys did most of their work. If anybody at home wants to Google it, they'll see it's a studio with this gigantic stairway that goes up to a very high control room. And in Studio 2 is this piano called the Mrs. Mills Piano that never leaves Studio 2. McCartney played it on Lady Madonna. He played it on just a bunch of Beatles records. And Mitch, in Mitch's way, he must have been talking to Marty because Marty's our resident doctorate in Beatle. But Mitch said to Peach, I'd like to use the Mrs. Mills piano. And I'm thinking, I happen to overhear it, I'm thinking, what, you can't like use a, you know, a Yamaha? You know, yeah. Mrs. some dowager widow happened to own a piano. But anyways, we found out the provenance of the Mrs. Mills piano. So it's on the record.
Oh, that's amazing.
On half the tracks is Mrs. Mills piano. Mitch's Mills piano.
Mrs. Mills,
Mitch's Mrs. Mills piano.
Blues for you.
That was I'll Play the Blues for You featuring Mitch Jacor from Double It Up.
We insisted to be in Studio 2 for the most of it, right? A couple of days at least. That was partly why it took so long, because we wanted that studio, and they haven't changed anything.
Wow.
Because they don't want to change the sound, the ambiance, the feel.
Yeah.
So that was one of the reasons.
Floor, if you look at old pictures and new pictures of us there and pictures of, you know, those guys, the four guys there.
Those four guys.
The background is the same.
So how many days were you in the studios?
About a week.
About a week, wow. And how much arrange, like, did you know what you were going to go do? And did you have the song choices and everybody kind of knew, or the arrangements, or...
Boy, like, that's a,
how
that's
planned
a
were you,
question.
Or did you get there and go, hey, let's try this one, because I'm in the mood for that?
Because we've played together so long, there's a beautiful chemistry that has happened over the past decades, where we kind of finish each other's musical sentences. So, although I knew the tunes that I wanted to do, I just wanted the boys to have working knowledge of them, so we'd cut live.
Wow.
So the conversation, and that's really important, because you can't have a conversation with someone when they're not in the room. They have to be able to respond to you and you to them, and then them to the other guy to him, and so on and so forth. And that's where the magic, in my mind, happened. So to answer your question, did we choose? Yeah, we chose the songs ahead of time. I had to find tunes that I keep in mind. Now, I was never thinking there would be a second album. The first one, Cliff Goodwin, Rhythm and Blues Union, was going to be it. So when Peach came down the pike to suggest a second, on top of all the rest of the amazing things, I had to find another 10 songs that would work for the band, that I could sing, and that I felt had something to say. That in itself posed a little bit of a problem, because my range is not Pavarotti-esque, shall we say.
and coming up to that 6 months mark before we left, Cliff would send me songs that he'd find. He'd say, what do you think about this one? And I wasn't really editing the songs. He wanted me to get a sense of what he was thinking of doing. So he'd send me these songs. He'd say, this is by this guy, this is by this guy. And I thought they were excellent, because I knew his range. I wanted an album for myself that was a guitar-centric album, because he's my guitarist, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't want a record that was just, you know, nothing, right? So I said, let's get some songs that let you show yourself. And he did. And he came up with some great things. Then they arranged them, as he said. They did some at the studio. They did some arranging. But they knew ahead of time what they were going to be doing in general, for sure.
I think the operative phrases. I wasn't working in a bubble. I didn't come in and hip the guys to what I was doing all of a sudden, and having kept it secret. That's not the way we work.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we go the other way. Years ago, we used to say, when we first started playing with Mitch, it was the Mitch Jacor School of Skydiving, parachutes optional.
Go on.
Because, you know, there's tons of stories about, you know, use your ears, not your head. And it served us well. I remember Wolf Chinandi is the bass player on this record, and we've been playing together forever. Tells this great story about when he first was asked to join Mitch's band back in the 70s. And he badgered Mitch for material. I got to know the songs. What are we going to do? I got to know the songs. So Mitch sent him a bunch of tunes. The first night we're on the bandstand, Mitch didn't do any of them. We knew it's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine,
but there was a lot of discussion ahead, even as far as Ann Nicholson.
Oh, yeah, right? Okay. So I'm glad you brought that up. Now, the young lady on the record, her name is Ann Nicholson, Ann Lang Nicholson. We met her back in the 70s, when we were all with Joe Cocker. She was one of the background vocals with Clydie King and Mona Lisa Young. Couple of these songs, I knew I really wanted to do them, but I knew I couldn't sing the whole tune. So I had to brainstorm how to figure out duets. So that's the two. There's a couple songs that are bona fide duets, and because we sang together, she sang the parts that I couldn't reach.
She's incredible.
She is. She's. She, Yeah, we found what her. She was working with Leon Russell. We found her. And I called her up. And again, it's indicative of the family we kind of have. Peach knows what I'm talking about. Hey, Annie. Yeah. Cliff, how are you? Great to talk. Because she's living down in Nashville. Listen, I'm going to make a record. We're going to make another record. I don't think I tipped my hand. And she said, let me interrupt you. Yes.
That's great.
And then I told her where we were doing it.
Oh, geez.
And of course, that usually is the capper.
No kidding.
Abby, what?
Wow.
In London, England?
Thank you.
Sometimes Too Much Ain't Enough Love, featuring Ann Lang Nicholson. You're tuned to WCUW 91.3 on the FM dial, online at WCUW.org. Please go there, become a member of the station.
You know, well, her one of her ex-husbands is Michael Lang from Woodstock.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's one of the original organizers of Woodstock. Yeah. The guy with the curly hair on the motorcycle.
Yeah. In the movies, yeah.
That's funny. Wow.
Yeah, he was managing Joe when we connected with Joe Cocker, and subsequently for over a dozen years.
And it was obvious when he said to me, I think these two songs could use a duet.
Yeah.
I hadn't known Annie, but I said to him, well, yeah, it's great. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And they were phenomenal. You know, one of the songs on there that is a duet, Too Much Ain't Enough, right? It's incredible because when they were recording that one, as I think that was the first duet they might have done at the studio. And Cliff was downstairs singing, and Ann was up in the control room rehearsing. But Cliff put his part down. It was so good that when he came back in the control room, everybody started clapping. So we knew his track was perfect.
Yeah.
And if you listen to it, it really is. And what we heard Ann singing up in the control room to go with that, it just was magic. Wow. And luckily, when they put it all together, it just came out tremendous.
Yeah, we had it in a couple of takes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she's incredibly soulful. And again, the only way this could have worked is the way, luckily, which is the way we did it.
Yeah.
Where there was nobody was copping an attitude, even though they were all such incredible players. I'm blessed to play with these guys beyond. But, you know, when you're singing and playing with people of this caliber, mm-hmm. and there's no head trip baggage, which is really, really cool. It just goes down. And like Peach said, you know, we cut the thing in a couple of takes and there you go.
Wow.
Yeah, and the live thing was important. When he's mentioning live, he's talking about being able to see everybody. Also, is because you can capture the room sound that way, which a lot of studios, you can't capture the room. And this album, we were able to capture the room by putting some overhead mics and whatever. They played live so they could all see each other and, as he says, have a conversation. And you can feel that in this record. A lot of records aren't done that way these days, right? Somebody puts their parts down. Maybe they send it across the ocean.
I don't even know if people play real instruments these days on a lot of stuff,
that's
you know?
True. How true.
That's
true.
How true. Yeah, it's a different... We come from a different time. No better place to do it.
Yeah. And it was big enough room. I mean, Studio 2 is very large. Studio 1 is where they do all the Star Wars things.
Yeah, the big symphonies.
150.
Oh, wow. That's the cavern. It's gigantic.
Wow.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. And Studio 3 is another one. It's a little more modern. It has different sounds. Yeah. So all the heavy tracks we always did in Studio 2. So,
yeah, to use that room. When we were mixing, I just push up the faders for the room sound, and all of a sudden the record comes alive. Oh, yeah, it was, like Ron Wood says about playing guitar, he goes, you put your fingers in the right place and it plays itself.
Yeah. It's an unbelievable album from start to finish. And I was very happy to hear that it was even going to be happening and like floored.
And it almost didn't.
On top of that, Peach says, oh, yeah, we're going to do vinyl too.
Yeah. That's
which is wow, because that format is so near and dear to our hearts. But you just... It's prohibitive price wise.
Well, I know vinyl has made a big comeback, as you know.
Yeah.
Now it's still
against all odds.
Really. Yeah, against really. All odds.
Now, it's still a bit of a niche. Don't get me wrong, but it's made a huge comeback. I sent Cliff something a couple of weeks ago. I was in Target. There's no CDs at all. It's all vinyl.
Wow.
There's some DVDs, but there's no CDs at all.
Speaking of CDs and vinyl, thank you for offering this because it's WCUW's Spring Fun Drive. We're going to, tonight only, if you become a member of the station, that's $50 a year. If you'd like a CD or a vinyl from Cliff on Double It Up, just go on to our website, wcuw.org, hit the Donate Now button. There is a space in that online form that'll give you a place to put a note. Put a note that I would like a CD or an LP, and that note will get to me, and we will get you a copy of this awesome album if you don't already have one. For those that would like to just go buy one, Joe's albums down at right in front of Mechanics Hall.
Yeah, if you find that after you become a member of WCUW and you get your complimentary Cliff Goodwin Double It Up record and you just find that you need more, you can go down to Joe's albums in the Mechanics Hall building.
Yeah.
And he's selling vinyl and CDs as well.
Yeah.
And please go down and say hi to Joe for us.
Yeah.
And they're always available at his gigs. They sell well at his gigs. So.
Speaking of gigs, I just saw you a couple of weeks ago with Young Mike Lynch. I was blown away.
Young Mikey and the Renegade Guitar Department.
And I know you're doing that again Friday, April 26th.
That's right.
At Vincent's.
Yep.
And I know the Silverbacks, you kind of retired, but you guys do have a gig this summer.
I understand this. We're going to do something at Powder Mill Park in Spencer. I believe it's the end of June.
It's June 30th.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go.
I got my finger on the Cliff Goodwin pulse.
Well, thank you. That's good. That's good. Yeah, we, aside from that, we wanted to put it to sleep for a while, give it a rest. We still all love each other. There's no two ways about it. And again, with that band, Mike, the older Mike Lynch, sorry, Mike, and Jimmy. I mean, we were together in Albatross over 50 years ago.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of history there as well. But we just wanted to give it a rest for a while, and we'll bring it back hopefully every now and then if the situation is right. But the Spencer Concert Series is a great reason, a great cause, and so we said yes.
And what else are you doing? You play with a lot of different people.
Well, I'm trying to... You know,
I'm glad you didn't retire, by the way.
Yeah.
Thanks, Peach.
I think I am too. I'm trying to, you know, field whatever comes my way, you know, journeyman gunslinger, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
And it's fun because it kind of brings me back to the days of sessions where you were hit with material and you had to make your way through it. And so that in itself is thrilling. So there's no preconceived format to a lot of the people I'm playing with, some obviously, but not like when I play with Mikey Lynch and Vincent's with Duncan Arsenault, they just start things.
And that bass player,
chase them through
the bass player was, I thought he was just amazing. He was so good.
It's amazing. Yeah, he's
physically like, into it, like just his whole body was into it. I was really impressed with him.
He's kind of like a cartoon character.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But
he's
good.
Not afraid to tell you. Here I come. I'm playing.
Oh, he was awesome. I'd never seen him before.
Yeah.
Well, that's
inspiring.
Great to listen to him in a small place like it was back in
'70s. Well, you can't get much smaller.
You can't get much smaller. But also, he's got gigs at, you know, these theaters and stuff like that, which you can catch him at too. But I like the fact that he just plays and he wants to play.
Yeah.
So he'll go to a small venue. You can talk to him. You can meet him.
But really, isn't that the essence? If you think about all the people that we revere, and you know who I'm talking about, the legends, they all started out in very small places doing essentially a residency, build their chops and build their following and build their repertoire and understand how to do it rather than just getting thrown into the deep end and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
So to me, it's full circle in a way. It's full circle. So, yeah, I mean, I wish I could tell you more about where I'm playing. I know, actually, we do have a thing. Some people out there will remember I played with a guy named Fly Amiro many, many years ago. We're doing something in Gloucester on May 11th at a new place called The Cut, C-U-T. And we do this every so many years. Actually, it's been quite a few years since we last did it, called The Big Strum. And you can use your imagination as far as what that is. That's 360 degrees of guitars, left to right.
Wow.
And this year, this time we're doing it again. Wolfie Janandis is on bass. A guy named Mike Levesque on drums. You might remember him. He played with David Bowie.
Wow.
And myself and Fly Amiro. And a guy from Blue Oyster Cult named Joe Brashad.
Wow.
And so the Big Strum, that's in Gloucester on May 11th. So you see.
You're out there.
Yeah, with different configurations. It makes it very interesting.
And you'll have your album or CDs with you?
Well, I'll have some with me on April 26th because they make great Cinco de Mayo presents.
Oh, right, right. Oh, it's an excellent album, and I'm very glad that, Peach, that you came up with this idea during COVID, no less.
You're
and
glad?
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad. Everybody should be glad. We're all really glad. Because, I don't know, I mean, him retiring is just a ridiculous thought.
No, we
couldn't
let that happen.
No.
You know, you go in his house and he has all his, he has gold records up there from, and there's a Robert Palmer one that he's on there.
Wow.
He's on his hit.
Yeah.
And he's got all the Joe Cocker ones up there.
Wow.
But I look at that and I go, I really like that one.
Yeah, and you did it. You made it happen. I mean, you know, it wouldn't have happened without.
It's really easy to look at and go, oh. But it's amazing to now we've fleshed out the behind the scenes story.
Yeah.
Basically showing that, you know, like, you know, the metaphor, the World War II metaphor. So we're in the UK and there's France. It's easy. Invade. Just go across the channel. How difficult can it be?
Yeah.
You know? Or the guy comes out of the spa and he's looking at the moon and he's saying to his buddy, just go fast. You'll get there.
You
know? No, it's not that easy.
No, yeah. It's
the logistics
really not.
are mind-boggling.
And that you guys made it over there and all you got there and equipment. You just brought your axe and the saxophone.
Yeah, we rented amps and, you know, they have some great stuff at the studio.
Mm.
And that was, you know, just buzzing around London to me is a trip because there's so much history. You know, you're walking in the footprints of the...
Yeah,
of the giants.
Yeah, it was a little. Yeah, that was a trip because first we went out to get a couple of amps for Cliff, and he was playing them in this place that sells that kind of stuff, it rents that kind of stuff. And we bring it back to the studio. Then Marty would say, "Oh, I need this 24-inch cymbal or something like that."
Oh, jeez.
Ah, call him up. I want to go again. Go to this place. Bring it back. Well, I think it needs to be a 22.
Oh, my God.
There was a couple of times like that, but it was all fun.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a faraway place.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was all fun to get just the right gear that they wanted for that, which was important to me because I needed them to be comfortable, right? And Cliff is the producer of the record. He needed them to be comfortable playing what they wanted to play. So we did. We ran around London a little bit and got what we needed to get.
Wow.
I think Marty wanted a 22-inch.
Maybe
it
was.
Because that's what Ringo used on
Chicago. Oh, yeah.
So, oh, geez, yeah. Of course.
Oh, he knows all the backstory. You know.
Yeah.
Beyond, it's to a different level. As a matter of fact, I got to tell this bit of a story. So when Peach originally said, you know, can you do it? And I went, yes. I called everybody in the band.
Yeah.
I called Marty and I said, well, we're going to make a new record. Are you into it? He went, yeah, sure, no problem. I said, we're going to do it, but we're going to do it at Abbey Road. Now, those of you who don't, who have never heard Marty Richards, you should have heard of him because he's absolutely one of the world's best drummers.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also one of the biggest Beatle fans in the history of everything. So he said, great. Wow, this is unbelievable. And we hung up the phone. About 5 minutes later, his wife called me. And she said... I said, hello, hi, Laurie, how are you? She said, Cliff, what did you say to him? I said, what do you mean, what did I say to him? She said, he's running around the house, bouncing off the walls, screaming, Abbey Road, Abbey Road.
Oh, my God.
Abbey Road. And I tell the story now, I'm shaking because it's so charming, but true. This is intense for us. A once-in-a-lifetime thing that you don't wake up in the morning and say, oh, I'll do this today.
Or that you ever thought it could.
Oh, God, no. No. I mean, we did some recording in London before for a Joe Cocker record at Air Studios, which was George Martin's studio that he built, Air. Nice try, George. Didn't come close to Abbey Road. We did a Joe Cocker record at Criteria in Miami. We did some recording at Compass Point in Nassau, Sunset Sound in L.A., Ardent Records in Memphis. Suffice to say, we've been to a lot of great tip-top studios. But I've got to tell you that I've never been in a studio that sounded just playing like Abbey Road.
Yeah. So it's not just who has been there in the past and the magic it has in history, but that it actually sounds that good, different.
Yes, it does. It does. I'd like to say it makes you raise your game.
Yeah.
And the people are awesome. You know, they're all, you think that because they had the Beatles and Pink Floyd and Elton, you know, all these other people. But when you walk in, you're treated like gold. It's just one of those places. It's a beautiful place to be.
And you got to do it with your friends that you guys have known since the 70s. Yeah.
And I just want to interject the players on this album. Wolf Janandas on bass, Cliff Goodwin on guitar and vocals, Derek Dyer on saxophone, Mitch Jacor on piano and organ, Marty Richards on drums, and Ann Lang Nicholson on vocals.
This album, I got to say, people, if you haven't heard it yet, hear it. It's Cliff Goodwin, Double It Up, Rhythm and Blues Union. And if you are listening tonight and become a member of WCUW, tonight only, $50 membership gets you, or $50 re-membership, whatever you call that. What do you call that?
Re-up?
I don't know.
It's a military term, isn't it?
No. Yeah, what do you call that? Renew. Oh, renew.
That's it.
Renew. If you renew your membership tonight, on our website, WCUW.org, you can get a copy, a CD or a vinyl, straight from Cliff Goodwin. Well, I did joke that I was going to have him drive these things around Worcester to everybody. We won't make you do that. Anyways, we'll figure out the...
It might be kind of fun.
I mean, you know... But no, tonight only. And if you didn't get a copy and you're already a member, or you already gave the money, give some more money, because we could always use it.
Right.
This is a shoestring budget down here at Community Radio. And we love new members all the time. And I'm really glad to have had you guys in, because this is a monumental thing that happened to one of our own Worcester. I've been doing this Rock and Talk series. I've had Jim Perry in the studio. That's going to start next week, airing that next week. And I know you and Jim have known each other since you were teenagers.
High school.
And apparently everybody I talk to has all known each other since high school.
Mm. Worcester's a little village.
It is. Oh, yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
Which I love. It's nice. And when I hear that everybody knew each other, and Peach, I didn't know who you were. And I talked to my friend John Solaperto, who I'm sure is listening right now. And he's like, oh, yeah, he recorded me and Joe D'Angelo a couple of years ago.
And he's got a great voice. And enjoyed doing some work with him and Joe.
That was in the end.
Yeah. And then we were talking before we started recording, and they were talking about that John Solaperto was in the band The End with you back in the day. And I don't know. It is a small world.
It is. But a good one.
A small Worcester. It really is.
Great.
Well, thanks so much for coming in, and I hope everybody's enjoyed this interview. I know I have.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you,
Gail.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
Yeah.